This morning, when Miraben asked me to suggest a topic, I was trying one or two things in the area of science and spirituality and some things like this that are aspects that my role as a science writer have equipped me for to some extent. But she quite rightly chose another speciality, which was obstacles. And the title of this session is Becoming the Conqueror of Obstacles. And I felt that is really appropriate because I've had a good journey with Baba now. I've been on this path with the Brahma Kumaris for 25 years. And those years have seen a lot of obstacles. All of them, of course, to do with my own stage. Nothing in the end is an obstacle externally. Everything has to do with the way we respond to what life presents us with. There's an old English saying that what we need to do is to turn stumbling blocks into stepping stones. What may sometimes seem like an obstacle, which is a stumbling block, you know, something you fall over, seemingly tripping you up, creating difficulties for you. If you can just understand it properly and develop the right strategies, it becomes a stepping stone, which is like something in a river. Stepping stones help you across a river, so help you to get across to the other side. And I don't think there's anything that isn't susceptible to that change from stumbling block to stepping stone. So in a sense, this is what being victorious over obstacles means. Not blowing them up with a gun, you know, trying to turn them into smithereens, being violent towards them or trying to conquer them in that sense of giving them energy, but transforming them so that they become your helper. This is a lovely way of thinking, because then when you are facing some obstacles in your journey and you feel, oh, this is just such a difficult path, or this person is such a problem for me, or these kind of things, if you're alert to remind yourself, then you can transform that feeling in an instant into something where, right, this is a challenge for me. This is something that's a situation that's offering me something to learn, to move forward. So that the journey itself, with its obstacles, you start to welcome them, actually. It's not that you want to be creating difficulties for yourself, because Baba does tell us that he wants us to be constant over a long period of time, because that gives us deep sanskars of contentment. But to the extent that there is misunderstandings and body consciousness still inside the soul, then obstacles are our teachers. They are drawing our attention to the fact that we've still got things to learn, and it's better to learn them than leave them unlearnt and have some painful realization when we die or when the whole kalpa comes to an end. Much better, much more royal to learn along the way. I had an interesting conversation at a retreat in Europe a little while back with a sister who, we came into Gyan at about the same time, and she's had a completely different journey in Gyan from myself. She didn't have a family. I think she may have been married or had a partner, but she didn't have a family. She took on the challenge of running a centre and then becoming a country coordinator very quickly, very early in her life in Gyaon, with all the challenges that that entails, you can imagine. And sometimes over the years, seeing her have a role like that, whereas I was still engaged with family for many years, while my children grew up, and then Daddy sent me back into the newspaper business after I'd been away from it when I first came into Gyaon. So I was back in full-time newspaper work for many years. And sometimes when I was doing those things, they felt like obstacles, because they brought up a lot of mire in me. My attachments would still be there. My ego involvement in my work would still be there. It's like Ravan was my companion in a way. And I said in this conversation with this sister, it was at a retreat and in front of a gathering of VKs, it was really a very respectful conversation, a very enjoyable conversation, and I had the realization that over the years, even though I felt as if Ravan had been my companion a lot, whereas Baba had been her companion, that's the way I'd been seeing it, I'd realized that after some, this was about two years ago, so after some 22, 23 years, we'd come to roughly the same place in our spiritual journeys. And this is wonderful, quite wonderful to understand that, you know, whichever route you find yourself and the drama taking you, it's never going to be a cul-de-sac unless you allow it to be that. It's always going to be something that will move you forward, whatever the circumstance. It might seem as if other people, you know, have such a much more privileged situation than you, but not necessarily true at all. In fact, sometimes when we have roles that open out for us very easily in the Brahmin family, like say you have some special skill that the family can use easily and readily, that can be very good, because it can take you into the company of others, which is always good. That's a real plus, to be learning from other BKs. But it can also, of course, be a trap where you find yourself quite comfortable in that role. You find yourself fitting in and able to feel that you count. And it may actually be just a comfort that is arising from nourishing the limited self, that part of us that wants to define ourselves in limited ways, rather than really getting down to the core, the essence of soul consciousness. So everything, every situation that we find ourselves in, we can never really rightfully, I feel, complain about it. In fact, with that realization, the other side of it, in a sense, is to accept everything. And there's great power in that. I didn't understand this for a long time, to tell you the truth. And when you don't accept things, it's one of the sources of leakage that Daddy Janki often speaks about in her classes, where your psyche in some way is worrying or fearful or anxious, and those emotions create disturbance and block your ability to connect to Baba, because connection with Baba requires stillness, requires peace, love, positivity. So any kind of rejection of other people, of circumstances, of yourself and your part, your weaknesses, any kind of rejection and feeling of disturbance about it is liable to itself be an obstacle, because it stops you from taking power from Baba. I did make this mistake for quite a long time, for whatever reason, karma, lack of understanding. But when I started realizing that if I love every situation. Try now. I really am. This is my main dharma in the last couple of years. That when I find myself old sanskars of criticism or rejection of the self or others or situations, when they start firing up again, no, that is of the past. That is of Ravan's kingdom. That method of coping, which no doubt was useful in some ways, you know, in limited ways in Ravan's kingdom. Everything to do with Ravan's kingdom is limited. It gives you some limited feedback, but it cuts you off from some other aspects. And that's why it's out of date now. What we need now is Ram's kingdom's consciousness, which is of unity and acceptance. We'll get back to that, even though we're in a muddle and a mess here in Kali Yuga, of course, but we can bring a consciousness of acceptance and love even into here into Kali Yuga, and that's actually very important. When we love, the thought came to mind this morning. I was in a conversation on a bus, and the thought came to mind that when we love, one way that it helps us is that it seems to make the brain more plastic, more ready to accept new things. You know, when we lack love, especially if we're defensive, of course we know this from our own experience, that if we're defensive and rejecting, we're not going to learn. But the counterpart of that is love. And that energy of love and acceptance, really in a very practical way, helps the brain to reprogram itself, helps us to see that certain things can be let go of, old ways of reacting and responding to things that are no longer useful to us. Otherwise, we'll hold on to them. As long as we feel threatened and insecure, we'll find it very difficult to let go of old habits of thought and feeling. One of the very useful insights from brain science is that they don't think of the brain so much as a computer anymore, although of course it does play that role, but they call it the feeling brain. There's a book by an American neuroscientist of that title, The Feeling Brain. Because what they've learned is that every impulse, every sensory input, you know, what comes in through the eyes, through the touch, even thoughts that arise, to different degrees, they all have some feeling attached to them. The brain does this, you know, with its 100 billion neurons. This is one of the miracles of it, that it multitasks amazingly. So nothing is neutral. Faces, gestures, we're registering feelings all the time in response to the sensory input, a person's tone of voice. A lot of it's unconscious, but nevertheless it's there. There's a story that illustrates this, in which it illustrates it so very sweetly that it's worth mentioning, I think, in which a young man had become convinced that his mother was not his real mother, but was pretending to be his mother. That she was an imposter. And he would get very angry and upset when she came into his presence. But if he heard her on the phone, he would be fine. He'd say, "Mum, there's this dreadful person pretending to be you." And he was completely convinced of this, and they took him to a psychiatrist who couldn't get to the bottom of it, and eventually brain scanning found that he'd suffered a lesion in the pathways, the brain connections, between the part of the brain responsible for facial recognition, so some neurons that specialize in that, and those neurons would see, yes, they would register, "This is my mother." But simultaneously with those facial recognition functions, there would be feeling attached to the faces, by other neural circuits. And there'd been a break between the facial recognition neurons and the part of the brain that would give those feelings of love and warmth that normally he associated with his mother's face, his own feelings towards his mother. Because those feelings were absent, his brain wasn't allowing him to have those feelings, his only conclusion was that this person who looked like his mother but didn't have the feelings of warmth towards her, she must be pretending to be his mother. This was his conclusion. And he was helped towards, you know, overcoming this problem when it was explained how that misinterpretation had arisen, that this break had happened in his brain. The connection between his auditory neurons processing input through the ears and the feelings attached to those sounds was intact, and so he heard his mother and he recognized it as his mother because the feelings of warmth were there, but not between his visual neurons and those parts of the brain that gave that emotional loading to what he saw. It shows how important these brain wirings are, and it helps us to understand why when Baba tells us that although we can obtain liberation in life in a second, because when we go beyond the brain, if you like, to that awareness of the soul, really deep soul awareness and God awareness, we bypass all these circuits. But when we're down in the brain, coping with day-to-day life, recognizing people, responding with feeling to situations and circumstances and people, then all these unconscious connections are there. So what do we do about that? If that's going to be an obstacle to some degree. Actually, two things. One, that Baba teaches us that we can, when we feel ourselves disturbed, that if we can just have the presence of mind to come into soul consciousness, to really bring our mental energies up to this high point, then you can understand that in that focused awareness of the incorporeal, and actually there are neurons that the scientists call the God spot, in a place just where Baba tells us, you know, the seat of the soul is, when you come to that place, you lift yourself beyond those, what we would call maya, where disturbance is present for you. Do you get the idea? That's one reason it's such a powerful technique to consider yourself to be that incorporeal point, and to go beyond in that way. You're actually bypassing these circuits that may be giving you illusory feelings that have got programmed into you because of past painful or difficult experiences that are no longer relevant to you in the work of constructing the new consciousness for Satyug. That's one method. But the other method, which of course Baba says has to be done over a long period of time, is the experience of love, wisdom, acceptance. And with that love, we start to reprogram our brains, because the other very powerful insight from modern neuropsychiatry is that the brain itself is much more plastic than used to be thought. It really does reprogram itself according to how we use it, quite rapidly. Even within, well, probably every thought we have changes it. Every feeling we have changes it. But certainly appreciable changes in our predispositions, and for example between a readiness to have feelings of contentment, which light up a certain part of the brain, or feelings of sorrow, which light up a different part of the brain, those predispositions can change in a period of just a few weeks when people learn methods for shifting from predominant feelings of sorrow to feelings of contentment. So our brains, if we're really alert and careful on this journey to use those brains well, they will gradually help us. But to begin with, of course, because of the old programming that's got in, they can be an obstacle. So there's a short-term solution, but also that long-term solution to bring love and positive feeling into every circumstance. That way you disempower your negative, rejecting, critical, disunified ways of thinking. You disempower them and still manage to function in life. The question does arise, though, we are still here in Kali Yuga. This is a world of disunity, of disharmony, of competition, not of cooperation in many areas. We have to live a life here. So how can we manage to be loving and to bring out these highest sanskars and yet still function with others, families, work colleagues who are not on the same journey as we are and who are functioning in Kali Yuga in Kali Yuga ways? It's a good question to look at. You might think that by deliberately engaging in a positive, accepting frame of mind, that you're going to be disempowering yourself in some way so that you won't be able to function in a world of division. I guess in some areas it would be true that there are certain types of occupation, certain types of relationship where they've been based on more limited ways of living and being, and you may have to make a break with those kinds of relationship or work. It's something that you may have to face, that you have to break completely from certain things. I remember many, many years ago, I was about a year in Gyan. Must have been a little bit more than that. It was my second visit to India, and Daddy had sent a group of us down south to Madras, where there was a conference. And there was a doctor there, a gynecologist, who had just about 6 months in Gyan, and he wanted us, group of foreigners, to come and meet his wife, because he thought we might be able to cool her anger in some way, or show her that the Brahma Kumaris was a respectable organization or something of this kind, because she was very angry about him becoming a BK. So we went to meet her, and she was a nice lady, but she functioned in a different way with him. And I remember our saying to her, "But you've told us that your husband, he used to drink, he used to be abusive, he used to do various things, you know, that were very unpleasant, and now he's peaceful, and he's more caring, and he wants the best for you." She said, "I preferred him when he would be angry and abusive. I can't stand this peacefulness, you know." And to some extent, it might be because when we're new to Gyan, sometimes we're not really tactful about the way we, you know, handle ourselves, and we're trying to be peaceful, whereas underneath we're not really that. And so that can be annoying to other people, especially if we're in some way putting it on them, you know, making them feel low, which of course is not the right way at all. But in another way, perhaps she was speaking the truth, that she really did prefer a relationship that was fiery and with conflict of that kind. Somehow that kind of made her feel alive, and that was what she preferred. So sometimes you really do have to be really strong inside and say, okay, this job or this work, this relationship really must finish. Internally, you have to have that feeling that even though we wouldn't force the end of a relationship where we had a responsibility in it, but internally the sense of responsibility has to shift to primarily to Baba, and then secondarily to the relationships. This is sometimes a hard thing, sometimes really hard, but it's a hard decision that has to be taken sometimes. But then there are other circumstances where if you can successfully bring your new consciousness into the relationship or the job, then things improve a lot. Because positivity is a power, and although there may be some occasions where it doesn't work very well, very often positivity can be hugely creative and constructive. Because positivity doesn't mean pretending that things are right when they're not. Positivity means seeing past the negative to the reality of the original. Knowing that there is peace, love, strength in every soul, and that where that has been lost, it's just because of the time in history that we're at. And when you take that creative act of seeing past the negativity and knowing that the positivity is there, that's enormously uplifting for others. We all experience that with the seniors, with the daddies. Probably you've experienced how sometimes you may feel that you have some insuperable obstacle and you're demanding a solution because it doesn't seem as if Gyan is offering that solution. And you go in front of someone, in my case, early in Gyan, it would be Daddy Janki or Sister Jenti. And just coming into their presence, I'd find that the obstacle dissolved because their positivity reminded me of my positivity. And that positivity would then provide me with a solution. I'd realized that it was just a way of thinking, a way of reacting, and not really real. The obstacle just disappeared. Might come back again later when I wasn't in their company. That's where you need Gyan as well and make your own efforts. But definitely positivity is such a power. There's all sorts of, you know, wisdom in books about the power of positive thinking and these things, how when you, for example, you have a boss who seems an intolerably bad in some areas. But if instead of focusing on his weakness, you make it your job to try to minimize the effect of that weakness on the company and bring out his strengths, that's going to be good for you, for the company, for the boss. Everything improves. Whereas focusing on other people's weaknesses is has a very negative impact on an organization. I think there's a number of things that have helped me move forward through the range of obstacles that have come my way over the years. One of them is that at a certain point in my BK journey, I realized that I came to Baba to experience joy. I wasn't that happy when I came to Baba, although externally things seemed quite good, you know, but it was all superficial really, and like building a house on sand. And that had started to come home to me. I was realizing that this wasn't really where happiness lay with the hard-driving journalistic career and sort of nice house and car, these things, that wasn't really what life was about. Life was more about love, and there wasn't the love present in my life at that time that made me feel that this was a good life. Now, love is so much more present in my life, including in my Lokic relationships. I feel hugely grateful to Baba for having made this possible. But along the way, the feeling that I don't want to suffer was one of the things that has helped me move forward past various times when I have been suffering. It's like a sense that I don't want to dwell on things that make me unhappy, and that's a very good feeling to inculcate, that even though you may experience sorrow at this moment, because we've all got various sanskars that remain to be dealt with, but to have the feeling that no, that's not what I'm on this journey for, so let me find a way through this, let me find a solution, and to go to others to help you. Not to be independent-minded about this. This is a family. It's one of the great things about this Brahma Kumaris. It's a family, and it's full of people of wisdom. I had this brought home to me recently when an incident arose. Well, it was more than an incident. I had a period where I was feeling as if some of the juice had gone out of my Brahmin life. There was a couple of work projects, service projects that I was involved in that didn't work out. That might have been an explanation, but I didn't really feel too bad about that. I felt, okay, you know, learn and move forward. But more it was a sense that somehow my conviction about the nature of what is going on, you know, the story that Baba tells us, that this old world absolutely cannot continue as it is, that he had that vision at the outset so clearly that this was, we were leading up to a mega collapse, and that the urgent job was to put in place the consciousness for the new age that would follow that collapse. When we have that really clearly in our mind, when the faith is there, that's what really marks us out as VKs, actually. But it comes and goes. Sometimes the clarity is there. You feel, yes, yes, this is all that really matters. I want to align myself with this work of putting in place that new consciousness for the new world. At other times, maybe you feel, but, you know, people have thought in the past that the Kalpa was going to finish, or that, you know, there were millenarian movements that thought that after 1,000 years post-Christ that things were going to come to an end. Then there's Nostradamus and his predictions. There have been all these things. It's obviously something in human nature that likes to think that some disaster lies ahead. Maybe it's because it helps us to detach a little from things, because when we're over-attached, you know, they hurt us. And if we can think, well, the world's going to come to an end, it helps us to detach in a kind of fake way. So I didn't want that, but sometimes that feeling that of doubt about the picture as we paint it would come in. And I suffer, even after all these years, I was suffering this, maybe unconsciously, not consciously allowing it, but something of that feeling coming in the past year. And I couldn't figure out why it was, and it was making me angry and irritable. It was making me grumpy, you know, because here I am, I'm surrendered to Baba on the basis that I love Baba and his family and his work and I believe in it. And here were these feelings coming from somewhere that maybe, you know, that was weakening my sense of the rightness of what I was doing. And I couldn't figure out where this was coming from, frankly. Because sometimes these things do come from deep, deep inside, and you don't know why. And so this is an example of where someone who knows me well and who's a good friend, which is Sister Jenty, was able to, in one word, like, lifted this. It was amazing. It's like, you know, naming the part, or it's like just, I don't know, quite... Sorry?
An eraser.
Yes, that's right. Like switching on a light and the shadow and instantly disappears. Instantly gone. And the word, we were on a trip from London. It took about a 3-hour car ride and I was driving. And you don't often have that time with Sister Jenty. So we'd gone through some you know, a bit of chit-chat about service and this and that. And then I was able to bring this up. And she said, you know, Neville, I think that this has something to do with your grandchildren. And I said, what? What's that got to do with it? You know, I really couldn't compute it. She said, yeah, I think it may have something to do with your grandchildren. And actually I'd given her a clue, which she explained to me, because it turned out to be absolutely right. And I was amazed that she should have been able to diagnose it so accurately. But she said I'd given her a clue because there'd been an interview that I'd done at a program with Daddy Gulzar a few months previously. Just a short interview. And one of the questions I'd asked Daddy was, I'd said something like, Daddy, sometimes I feel like Arjuna, you know, when he has that doubt, when Krishna's telling him he's got to kill his relatives, and Krishna says they're already dead, you know, so don't feel bad about it, but Arjuna does feel bad. He feels, I can't kill my kith and kin, you know, he has this crisis. And Daddy Gulzar's response had been, you have to just let go completely of iron mine. You have to fulfill your responsibilities, she said. It's not that, and this is, I could have pressed her further about that, you know, but you're saying they're my responsibilities then? Then what do you mean let go of iron mine? But Daddy Gulzar is so utterly clean herself, so completely free of any iron mine, that you really do, I didn't want to argue, I just accepted what she said and felt the truth of it, that it had to do with that. But then I'd not thought it through further. And it took Jenty to actually put her finger on it. There was these grandchildren, because thinking about it, there are five of them now. I've two sons and they're both married, and these grandchildren are ages range from 2 to 6. And I had felt when being with them from time to time, what a marvel it is, the way nature just equips us with such natural love when we're with grandchildren, you know, for a grandparent. And it seemed perfectly all right, because it seems so utterly natural to love these grandchildren. But, you know, I'm thinking about it. Jenty didn't go into it. She just pointed to the area of you know, that she felt was responsible for this obstacle. Thinking about it, I realized that actually there is something biological, but biology is body. Biology is body. Biology is selfish genes, if you like. You know, this idea in science that our genes want to reproduce themselves. Where we're defining ourselves by our genetic inheritance, by our physical families. This feels natural because it's been with us for 2,500 years, half the Kalpa. That's one of the ways we've felt some sense of belonging in a world of disunity and loss. But it's not natural, it's not original to us. Isn't this amazing? It's a wonderful insight, you know. It feels so natural, but it's not. It has to be rooted out as well. It doesn't mean that you can't love. It doesn't mean that you can't have a special relationship. As Daddy said, you fulfill the responsibility, but it has to be something that is just... The love has to be a spiritual love. It hasn't got to have anything of ownership in it, which is selfishness, I and mine. And which will get in the way of your relationship with Baba, who says that we have to make him the only one who is ours. This is so interesting. I'm still thinking it through. And you may be able to help me from your own experience, but someone I mentioned this to was actually Dr. Julia from Sheffield a little while, some weeks back. She immediately understood, and you know how? She said that there was a family she knew from the north of England who had decided recently, they have these young children, and they decided recently that their experience of Portugal as a country, where they visited quite often, they felt it was such a child-friendly country that they were going to leave the north of England, where they felt it was not so warm, and they were going to emigrate to Portugal because they thought their children would have a better environment there. And they thought this quite seriously, they thought it through, and it was through their love and concern for the children. But the grandparents, who lived in the north of England, were very opposed to this. And Julia thought she could recognise that they weren't opposed to it for the sake of the grandchildren, they were opposed to it because they wanted the grandchildren to be near them, which is I and mine. You know, it's taking. It's not just what's best for the grandchildren, fine. It's wanting for the self. And how often in our relationships, really, even though we may justify them, that I'm doing this for you, actually, unconsciously, so often we're still serving ourselves. And this is where obstacles come. We have to understand these impulses that come maybe from our unconscious and really understand that when clouds come on our happiness in this way, it's probably something of this kind, something quite deep which we haven't recognized that's coming from the unconscious. This is why Daddy says there are two ways of dealing with these things. One, of course, is yoga, that powerfully, whenever we can, taking from Baba, allowing that relationship with Baba to fulfill all our emotional needs. Of course, if we can do that, it will do it really powerfully. It will displace these other needs. It will diminish their pull on us. But sometimes the trouble is the pull is there from these unconscious sources, and you can't have yoga. So the other way of doing these things that Daddy Janki has spoken of is that sometimes if there is an obstacle like this and you don't know where it's come from, you might have to go to Baba's room. This is the way she's dealt with it. You might have to go to Baba's room and sit there with it and go deep into the self to understand, try to understand where it's coming from. Really look deep inside the self. And she says that if you do this job, then in 15 minutes or in an hour or whatever it takes, 2 hours, you might actually remove something which could be a handicap, an obstacle in your pilgrimage of remembrance for years. This was confirmed for me recently in a conversation with Brother Rainer from Austria. He's a mental health nurse, and he's been with Baba for well over, I think, about 22, 23 years, and he serves within the BK family as well as in his Lockett work. And he was sharing in a group that I was in how he feels similarly that sometimes Brahmins have some deep attachment or something of that sort. It's usually an attachment that's so unconscious inside that has just not been faced, and it is something that is creating this disturbance that won't allow us fully to understand and accept what Baba is telling us. And he said in some instances he's helped people to get into that in ways that have liberated them from, maybe after years as a BK, it's suddenly removed that obstacle. One method that he uses with his patients, as well as when he's helping BKs in this way, is to find a sideways into it. He said, the unconscious, by its very nature, sometimes won't reveal itself. That's why it's down there. So if you just consciously tell yourself, or try to tell yourself deeply, I am Baba's child, I am a master almighty authority, I am conqueror of obstacles, you know, whatever you tell yourself in terms of these titles, your subconscious may not be accepting it. This is a problem where Brahmins sometimes are carrying on for years telling themselves these positive affirmations, which Baba is urging us to understand and work with, and they give such power when we do, but the unconscious hasn't quite accepted them. So one method that he uses to help him find a way past these things is a sort of indirect method, like he said he might say to someone, okay, what activity in life do you really, really love? And say that they might say, well, skiing is something I adore. I just adore skiing. And then he would help them to understand that the reason they love skiing is that skiing for them, let's say, represents freedom and power. And then he helps them to understand that they really do want freedom and power. That's the original nature of the soul. And when that is deeply understood and accepted, through this indirect means, you know, that the symbol of skiing helps you to reconnect with that deepest longing that's in the soul, then you may be able to shift the unconscious voice that says, actually, I reject this idea that I'm a pure, peaceful soul. It may have got in there through some painful experience, for example, that you loved and then lost, and you're afraid to love again, for example. Anything of this kind can leave these deep resonances inside, and we have to find our way past those. So sometimes simply yoga will help us. At other times, some analysis, some careful self-analysis, looking for where the shadows come, looking for them, trying to find out when I lose my sense of happiness and connection with Baba, what was it triggered that loss? I didn't manage it in the case of these grandchildren, but a friend like Jenti can help, and that's why it's so useful to have a friend, actually. Daddy says that Didi used to be her friend for many, many years. They would be real friends with each other, and they would understand each other, and so they would help each other past obstacles like this. It's really good to have a friend in Gyan, someone who really knows you well. We shouldn't think that that's something to be rejected, that we can just do this completely on our own with Baba. A friend is really helpful. And sometimes, increasingly, I think, even though in the early days the daddies used to teach that Baba is your everything, you know, he's your psychiatrist, he's your surgeon, he's your everything, so you don't need books about this and that. But sometimes books do help unlock the secrets of our subconscious and allow us to move forward. Sometimes they do. The reason why we should be very seriously cautious about Lokic things is that they're concerned with limited solutions to things. Then they're there to help people just to kind of a touch on the tiller of their life that may make their life a bit more comfortable and successful. But what we're after is really a revolution in our lives that will totally reform us and equip us for Satyug. So we don't want to get caught up with just being a bit more successful here and there. That's why, you know, it's not good to make yourself an expert on this, that and the other technique. Baba's method of deep, deep tapasya and relationship with him is the way forward for Brahmins. But sometimes you might get a clue from a friend who's found a book helpful, and it can just unlock something that is right for you. Some care is needed in unraveling some of these things that come from the subconscious. I think that's most of the things that I'd like to share on this subject, and I'd very much welcome your input and questions. I suppose perhaps finally one thing to comment on is patience. That comes with, in a sense, that's included with the very first thing that I mentioned about loving what is, and that includes you and your journey right up to this very moment, understanding that whatever your journey has been up to this point, whatever triumphs there have been, whatever tragedies, whatever mistakes you feel you may have made before Gyan, after Gyan, they are accurate in the drama. Up to this very moment, the drama is what it is. And Baba says, I love my drama. Why should you criticize my drama? And whatever is your drama is the drama. It's Baba's drama too. So there's that acceptance of the self, which is very empowering. especially if you, like me, you feel in one sense you've made plenty of mistakes. There's a lot to learn coming from a stone intellect position, which was mine. But with that acceptance, it also gives you the patience to dust yourself down, get yourself up again. You'll make more mistakes, but you don't let it deter you from keeping going. And that's the one, in a sense, a tragedy, although we have to accept the drama, as Baba does. But if people feel that because they've repeatedly tried to move forward and then some way they can't, and then they stop trying, that I feel, well, it's the drama, but it is also rather sad, because sometimes you feel that people pack it in when they were on the point of a breakthrough. Because some of these things do take some time and energy and effort. So patience is very important, always to give yourself that patience. See, it is a lovely subject, this conqueror of obstacles. So would anyone like to ask any questions, Father? I'll repeat it, unless there is a mic available. Do we have a mic available for the questions? Otherwise, I'll repeat it. Go ahead now. Keep your question short so that I can repeat it. The brother says, I mentioned you love what, I spoke of loving what is, accepting what is, but it reminded him of a phrase, yes, I do forgive you, but I don't forget. Accepting and loving a situation is not so easy unless you've understood what is the real cause of a circumstance. Because I may not be accepting and forgiving unless I understand what the real cause is all about. Yes, yes. So if you understand the situation, you'll much more easily be able to accept it as it is. This is so true. And our quest always has to be for that understanding. I feel that the tools that Baba gives us from Gyan are massively helpful in that regard. They're treasures of knowledge which other people don't have. For example, the understanding that souls have been on this long journey and they started out with their truth of being loving and whole and positive and warm and optimistic and joyful, but experiences over time, and we know what happened in the Kalpa. So that in itself is a wonderful understanding, so that when someone is behaving badly, and they're, frankly, it may be that they're behaving badly, not just my perception of it, but they are behaving badly, and yet to be able to recognize that they're behaving badly, not because they're bad intrinsically, but because they're hurting, and maybe they're hurting because of what they've suffered, and they're suffering because of their particular part in the drama over a long period of time, when we know that everything goes from a state of truth to a state of untruth. So this Gyan, this Trikaldashi perspective, you know, the three aspects of time, is such a powerful tool. It's why Vishnu is shown, isn't it, with that spinning that discus. It's like that discus is such a powerful tool because it cuts the head off this reaction that might otherwise come up in me of anger or upset when other people or circumstances are bad. But how often do we really apply it? We're neglectful about this. You know, there are things, petty things that I find myself still leaking energy from. Things, it might be something as simple as, let's say, you know, coming here to India, and there's a range of queues at immigration, and I have to make a choice which one I'm going to join. And I choose this one, and I see that one's moving faster. You know? And that one's moving faster as well. Why do I always choose the wrong queue? You know? And I'm wasting my time and energy watching how those queues are moving. It's some sort of sanskara, I don't know, ego or time consciousness from the past, you know? whatever it might be, but what a waste when I could be just being with Baba and, you know, enjoying that space where I don't have anything else to do, to be enjoying myself with Baba. Instead, you know, getting frustrated because I chose the wrong cue. And there must be so many circumstances like this where in little ways we're allowing things to become obstacles to us when we've no need to do it. We must be attentive to this, to spot ways of whereby we're doing that and fighting the situation as it is. We must love it. You know, okay, I made the wrong decision. I'm in the queue that is taking longest. That's going to give me more time to be with Baba. You know, we have to really transform every circumstance like that to find the positive in it. Actively look for it. Great, that guy just cut me up on the motorway. Wonderful. He's probably desperate to get to hospital because his mother's dying. Or great, because in the past I would have reacted with, you know, annoyance, but now I've got Baba with me, so I an understanding, so I'm not going to react with annoyance. We have to be attentive in all these little circumstances as well as the big ones, because these are things that cause us to become ordinary again when we don't love and accept and learn and keep moving forward. We must understand. You're quite right. Understanding is central to this. But so one method is to invoke love, because love does actually help us. You can bring the feeling forward, and it's more likely that with that accepting and loving feeling that you'll understand, actually. When you're rejecting and angry, even if the signals are there as to the reality of the situation, you may not see them, so you won't understand. You won't hear when a person says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. As, you know, you might be rejecting of that if you've fired up with anger or rejection. So the effort to love and accept is worth making in its own right, because that can bring understanding. Another person is more likely to feel able to explain to you. Your question is a very beautiful one, and I'm thinking about further aspects of it. As you say, it might be that something bad happens and you choose a forgiving attitude because you know that that's good for you. To be hateful and hostile is not going to do you any good. So you make that choice, but it would be more easy if you understand. So understand the reasons why something happened. So there's an interesting balance in here where, on the one hand, the search for understanding is useful and needs to continue. But on the other hand, we mustn't let that search for understanding take over. I'll see if I can explain the train of thought that is arising. Sometimes Daddy Janki has told me that I think too much. And we could take that partly at the level of just, you know, getting confused about things and trying to use the intellect too much to find solutions. Sometimes her method is, you know, to draw on that power from Baba, to let Baba's wholeness fill you, and then the solutions sort of offer themselves to you, not coming from your intellect, but just become apparent. They appear in front of you. You understand, or some signal comes to you that helps you to understand. So the trap, I suppose, is to be getting too intellectual about things, to be thinking that you can find solutions just by intellectualizing. But on the other hand, it is also good to continue the search for understanding in balance with acceptance and loving this drama of Baba's. And I'm thinking, not only does that help you to forget a situation, that if you understand why it arose, as you say, you wouldn't just forgive, but it would be nothing to you. But also, even on big issues, I've experienced that, for example, something like the issue of the cycle, the 5,000 years of the cycle. It's not a question of forgiveness or anything like that, but for me, because of having a head that was very full of the scientific worldview of things when I began in Gyan, this idea that all of history could be encapsulated in a 5,000 year cycle was difficult for me to take on board. And even concepts of soul and God, frankly, although my soul recognized these understandings and my heart recognized them, that's why I became a BK, but my intellect was really quite slow to actually say, right, I really understand and accept. It's a funny thing, but I think probably also, perhaps in many of us, there's something in us which, where the intellect doesn't want to just believe something because it feels nice. It wants to understand. It wants it to be true. Perhaps too often in the past we've, some guru has given us something, or it might be in a relationship, we've thought, you know, you are my everything, and we felt that sense of oneness and love, but of course it was limited, and so halfway across the river, boom, we drowned. And we don't want that to happen again, so we keep questioning. And up to a point, it's within our journey, and up to a point it can be very useful, and it's very individual in each one how much of this is needed. Some, their journey is such that when they hear Baba's Gyan, they feel this is the last pieces of the jigsaw for what they've been searching for. It makes complete sense. And the paradigm, the story Baba offers, is plenty for them. They accept it immediately. For others, these questions remain for some while, and it's just a little aside, but it's quite funny that to bear in mind that something like 4 out of 5 of the souls on this planet has been here for the less than 100 years. That's the way the population has grown. It was, I've forgotten, certainly in 1953 it was 3 billion, so 1 in 2 has been here less than 50 years. And in about the 1900 it was about 1.5 billion, something like that. So massive growth in this last 100 years or so. It's like the final flowering of the tree. And science has made that possible, actually. But I wouldn't say that the souls, when they come, are intrinsically different in their qualities. I feel that all souls have those. All souls come from the seed. All souls have that, those Baba's qualities of love, peace, wisdom, a kind of knowingness about the spiritual dimension. But it is true that a soul that comes towards the end of Kali Yuga, just in this final period, the way that they express that will be different from how the deities are expressing it, definitely. So you can still see that the spark of truth, of divinity, is present even in the newest souls. In fact, in many ways I feel that the drama is made in a very beautiful way, that just when, if it was left to the deities, they would have lost all their power, and even the founders of the religions by this time in the story have lost their power as well, even the religions that came later. So the world would be in a really sorry state if it weren't for the arrival of these billions of new souls. They're sustaining the tree. So actually their qualities are more in evidence than those of the old souls. This is something very important to understand. I often used to feel in the newspaper office, here I was trying to become, you know, peaceful and work with detachment and lightness and always be kind towards colleagues. And my work colleagues often set a better example on this than I did. And I couldn't quite figure out why until I understood that probably their experience was more recent. You know, perhaps they haven't had as long a journey through time as I feel I have had. So, although in some ways they would regard me as unique because of certain perceptions that I would bring, I also saw their contribution, you know, the lightness with which they would do their work, so that when they might have put a lot of effort into something and then the issue, the story gets finished, or, you know, the newspaper can't come out because of a strike or something like that, okay, it's happened, move on, next day, you know, face it, instead of being wounded and upset and carrying a burden and all the rest, which I would be a bit more likely to do. I've gradually been learning not to. But they had these qualities. So new souls actually bring a lot of quality to the world. In relation to the second comment or question about our relationships, and you mentioned how at the moment you feel that you're bringing sorrow to your parents because they don't like what you're doing. Sometimes there is such a thing, you know, well, sometimes this can be because of our youthfulness on this journey, so that the way we're going about our Brahmin life is unnecessarily, you know, creating disturbance. It takes a lot of tact and care to conduct ourselves accurately with our relationships. But on the other hand, sometimes it's very necessary in the drama that we do make a break, that a break happens, so that otherwise, if the old attachments and influences are still got too much of a hold on us, we won't be able to move forward as Brahmins. And so both aspects have to be looked at. But my faith is, and my experience is, that sticking with what Baba says ultimately is best, not only for me and for the world, I have that faith, but I've got the experience and the demonstration that it's very good for those that we're close to as well. It really comes well. But the sooner that we make a reality of our spirituality, so that we really become loving and considerate and are able to be with others without having to kind of create barriers between us and them, the sooner we can do that, the sooner it is that benefit reaches them. But it definitely does in time. But you've had the courage that you've thrown yourself into this in a wholehearted way, and your relatives will get the payoff for that as well in time. At the moment, you may be able to do more by explaining, you may be able to spend more time by helping them to understand, but the sooner the strength of positive spiritual love grows in you so much that whoever you're with, they feel the benefits of it, then the sooner that difficulty will be passed. It's something that is, I'm afraid it is something that happens along the journey. I saw it in my own journey too, that there were times when there was upheaval, but as the years have gone by, there's great acceptance. My son wrote an article for one of our national newspapers. Both my sons are journalists, and one of them wrote an article just recently for The Guardian, one of the UK newspapers, called What It's Like When Your Dad Goes Spiritual. And it was about events from 25 years back. So he's now 37, he was about 12 at the time. And he actually felt the impact of these changes in his parents' lives more than the older boy, who was a couple of years older and a bit more secure in himself. But Will was just on the brink of adolescence, and he had some funny stories to tell, you know, about like when he'd started at a new school, and the one of his problems was that our going spiritual, well, at least I was the one that was leading the BK life, but Liz, my wife, was writing about these things a lot, these changes, as a journalist. And she wrote a book about celibacy called Sex Is Not Compulsory, came out in about 1986. And Will had started at his new school soon after this, and he said that it was very embarrassing to him when girls came up to him and said something like, is it true that your parents are celibate? And is it true that they're doing this permanently? And are you celibate? And he said his answers were yes, yes, and yes, but I don't intend it to stay that way. It was actually a very funny article. Some of these embarrassing things that had happened for him, but the overall structure of it was he told these funny stories about the funny scenes that happened, but in the end he said the great thing was that my parents became much more giving. He said, you know, and they couldn't have been more supportive of me over the years. So actually that was the overall feeling in this, and it's true. From being, you know, those rather yuppie-ish couple, you know, into materialistic things, striving hard with our careers, wanting a bigger house and car and earn more money, all of those things that before Gyan, he saw these changes that happened subsequently. There was a bit of disturbance in the crossover, but his overall assessment was great because they'd become much more giving and considerate. So it has to be like that, and it will be like that. But on the way, it takes some courage because it does create some disturbance at times. Was one more question? Yes.
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
My question is related. A lot of answers are already got. There's one thing. Could you reflect or share some experience in how you as a Brahmin, because I have two small children, how you, I like to see, transform the Lokic love I have into a spiritual love.
Yes.
With the detachment, and like you spoke earlier, not like a natural feeling love, this is good, but to transform it into a spiritual love.
Yes. Yes, I'll try. It's subtle, because it all has to do with the transformation that's taking place inside. It all has to do with the switch from body consciousness to soul consciousness and making God your partner. Really, it's as simple as that. Because it's that removes the element of wanting and taking from our relationships. Truly removes it. But Baba does tell us that we have to fulfill our responsibilities by others, and by that he means, you know, of course, if you've young children, you love them. You have to, your love, it's like actually, I think in psychology, there's an understanding that where a parent's love is truly outward, and not wanting anything in return from the children, that's very healthy for children. When parents are giving conditional love, you know, I love you if you pass your exams, or I'll love you, you know, if you do this or that achievement, sometimes it's like their own neediness is expressing itself through the children. They're wanting the child to achieve in ways that they never did, for example, whether in sport or academic or whatever. That's taking. And the child feels that consciously or unconsciously, and it's damaging, actually. But where a parent has pure love, it only wants to give. It wants what's best for the child. I can't really offer more analysis of it, how it expresses itself. I can only really say that with the grandchildren, it's going to be a learning curve for me. I had a couple of days with them recently, just before I came to India, because I wasn't going to see them at Christmas. And one family I was with, and with my ex-wife, we live quite nearby. And so I spent some time with her and these children while their parents were off on something else. And all I can say is you don't want to be thinking about it as you're with the children. You know, it has to be natural. You don't want to be asking yourself, you know, am I being body conscious, that sort of thing, while you're with them. Somehow that would get in the way of a natural relationship. You just need to love them and appreciate them. And I felt that it was very, very beautiful, the time that we had with them. I don't quite know how it differed from the past, except that it didn't leave me, when the episode had finished, it didn't leave me with a sense of lack, you know, of any regrets at not being more with them, for example. Previously, when this I and my was coming in, and when it was that more body-conscious feeling, I had a feeling of guilt and of, you know, why, you know, my Brahmin life doesn't give me enough time to be with them. Am I doing enough for them? These sort of questions were coming in. This was just a really natural, loving time with them, and it was there, and it passed, and I've come to India, and I'm not thinking about them, except at the moment. So I can't really give more guidance than that at the moment. I'm still learning myself, but I do know that it has to do with just really trying to make sure that the only one that you're really taking from is Baba. Because with that, it will be spiritual love that you share with others. But spiritual love doesn't mean you can't hug and all that. We have, of course, in Brahmin culture, there are some things that we do so that old sanskars of, you know, lust or attachment don't fire up again. Those things are there to help us. But sometimes you can hug and love when you're confident that the expression of love is just a natural one. You know, again, on your question, sometimes we can go over the top in relationships with relatives in putting too firm a barrier between us and them, such that it creates more obstacles than it solves. We understand the reasons for not allowing attachment to come again, but we're in different days now from what Daddy Janki was in, for example, when, you know, that, I mean, one reason that she's so strong about non-attachment is that she saw how when the early Yajna had to split up, you know, there was 300 or 400 of them, and then when they hit the beggary period, when they ran out of money, and Baba had to send them back to their families as well as out on service in different ways, and only a few could remain in Madhuban, and many got caught up by old attachments when that happened. Many left Gyan. Their faith in what Baba was doing was weakened by the fact that the beggary period had come, and also when they allowed themselves, you know, their mothers were, you know, let me cook for you, let me care for you. You know, their sense of Baba as their cook and their carer was weakened, and they were pulled away and they were finished. So Daddy's seen all of that. But as long as you're careful in your own journey and understand, after all, it was a very new young movement then. Now we can see, we can be more confident. We can see what God's work's doing. You know, it's an incredible achievement which we see here today. So we can know that God's work is at work much more easily than they could then. So perhaps we can allow ourselves a little more leeway in expressing our love sometimes, you know? This is an interesting debating point, and each one of us has to make up our own minds about how far we can allow ourselves to express our love in physical ways and where we must draw the line. It's very individual. But thanks for that question. So now I think we should finish with a couple of minutes of yoga. And thank you very much for your attention on this subject. Very, very interesting one.